Oops. Some nice stories about working with Mel Weitzman at Berkeley Zen Center in the early days. Two of my favorites are Norman first went there having read some book about Zen, right? Which many of us, before we come, we've read some book about Zen. And you read about the great Zen teachers, right? Roshis and stuff. So Norman talks about finding the address in the phone book, you know, how you used to do things those days. And going to the right address, and there was a kind of ordinary looking, turned out to be another Jewish guy from New York, you know, out in front raking the leaves or something, and Norman got out of his car and said, "Excuse me, where's the Roshi?" And that guy said, "Oh, there is no Roshi. We only have a priest." And it turned out to be, that's who he was talking to, you know. And then another story I remember Norman telling is, at that end it was an attic, and Mel's seat would sort of just face the opening, you know, like here's the stairs going down, you know. And so he'd be sitting there facing in, and every morning at 5 or whatever, you know, dark or the very beginnings of the light or maybe a little candlelight or something, going up those stairs, and at a certain point you'd start to sort of see, you know, come into existence, you know, and there he was every single morning that Norman ever went there. You'd be sitting right there. So that's worth celebrating. I don't know, miscellaneous thoughts closer to home. Raison Bob here has been working in the back. We got a donation that we're putting into play, and so check it out. Some wonderful things are happening there. Thank you for that. Little by little, making that garden such a beautiful sanctuary, we have to remember to, like, go down there and, like, take sanctuary, you know. And, there's somebody else I was thinking of, but oh well. My apologies if it was you. If you want to be featured, you know. That's like every one of us. Yeah, no, he's going to talk about me next. No, I hope he doesn't. No, I hope he does. So let's talk about Zazen instead. Zazen doesn't get his feelings hurt so easily. I was thinking, you know, like if we really think about what we actually do, and if we vote with our feet, then we also kind of show what we value here or anywhere based on what we actually do. So I was thinking of the 120 minutes in our main weekly meeting this evening, Wednesday evenings. We spend, of those 120 minutes, we spend 60 minutes on Zazen meditation. About 30 minutes, you hope, not longer, on the Dharma talk. About 15 minutes on chanting and bowing and ritual. And about 10 minutes on kinhin, walking meditation. And then we add some minutes for the announcements and stuff at the end. Although lately I've been reminded by a few stalwart members that it would be nice if that wasn't too many minutes, the hanging around. Telling each other our announcements at the end, so we should just keep practicing being brief, I guess. Turns out we're making one of our members pretty late to pick up her kid and stuff like that, so we can keep working on it, but we'll always do it a little too long. And then also maybe we had some minutes of just hanging out, which I think the more I think about it, probably the more important those minutes are before and after the formal block of time. But in any case, the biggest chunk of time, double the length of the second place finisher, is Zazen, seated Zen meditation. So we talked a lot about Sesshin last week, which is our multi-day retreats in which we do a lot of Zazen. But last week we really recognized that it's not just the Zazen that constellates and makes the Sesshin what it is, makes it do whatever healing that it does. That the Zazen exists in a larger context. And see if you didn't hear that talk, we'll have it online soon, thanks to Talos. That's who else? Talos. That's who else? Stalwart, the uploader of Dharma talks. And if you're interested, he can train you. Not a desperate need, but it did occur to Talos and I the other day, it's something somebody else could do. So this week, to think about Zazen. We talked a lot last week about different aspects of Sesshin. It was really interesting, I think. So maybe we're into kind of a Zen basics series, you know? Sesshin, Zazen. We'll talk about bowing next time or something. And it's good to talk about the basics, right? Think about the basics. And maybe Zen practice is in fact nothing but the basics, returning to the basics. So the first definition of the word, the English word basic in the dictionary, is forming an essential foundation or starting point, fundamental. So that seems good. Maybe not just forming, but reforming, you know, recreating, re-understanding our essential foundation for our life, for our life. The synonyms they listed were fundamental, essential, primary, principal, cardinal, elementary, elemental, quintessential, intrinsic, central, pivotal, critical, key, and focal. So maybe it's like more than enough to be basic, you know? Hmm. Later on, we have to study what on earth advanced could be, you know? You know? What's left, you know? And why do we think we need such a thing? Why do we always need to be advanced or advancing? Maybe it's more than enough to focus on what's fundamental and essential. So the word Zazen is two characters. The first, Za, just meaning sit. Like we have Zafu, something you sit on. Sit Zazen and you're Zafu. And the second character is the character Zen, so sitting Zen. The character Zen, of course, has its own history and meaning as a word. It's the Japanese voicing of the Chinese voicing of the Sanskrit Buddhist term jhana, dhyana. D-H-Y-A-N-A is how it's spelled out. Or in Pali, they say jhana with a J, J-H. And jhana means concentration or absorption. Sometimes you hear Zazen explained as sitting meditation, which is good enough, probably. But meditation is a pretty broad, vague term, I think, in English. It's used in a lot of different ways for very different kinds of activities. And actually, the Buddhist term that's closer to what we most often mean by meditation, which usually means some kind of doing something with your mind, right? Calming your mind, having some kind of insight, realizing something, kind of reworking your mind, getting to work with your neuroplasticity, you know, and fix things up in there. So the Buddhist term that's closer to that kind of meaning is bhavana, which we don't use that often. Bhava means like becoming, so it's like the process of becoming. It's also bhavana is also explained as cultivating. And there are many, many wonderful practices that involve some kind of active cultivation or bhavana or becoming in the mind. Like you could plant and nurture your inner seeds of goodness in all kinds of ways, you know. Practices like loving kindness practice or different compassion practices or koan or phrase practices. And these are wonderful too. But actually, Zen, is from jhana. Allowing the mind to become deeply concentrated, absorbed. I don't know if we can make that happen, but maybe with the support of our Zazen tradition and everything that it's folded into and held by, we can create good conditions for this natural process to occur, this process of concentration, absorption, being basic, fundamental. So I keep thinking of this kind of dorky metaphor of, I don't know if it's dorky, but I keep thinking of it, so I'm tired of my own mind, but this metaphor of muddy water in a jar, you know, which I think I probably first saw in a kid's book about Buddhism. So maybe that's why I was a little pejorative. What's wrong with that, you know? It's probably the better source, you know, basic. You know? You can read a whole bunch of big long sutras, or you can get some kids' books. Probably better. Anyway, the metaphor of the jar of muddy water. So jhana is kind of like the clarity of the water when the mud you know, the mud settles to the bottom, right, after a while. But jhana is also really understanding and seeing and feeling the mud at the bottom of the jar. Jhana is clarity and mud and clarity. And sitting steadily in our body, in our mind, in our heart, breathing in and out, allowing our wholeness to really penetrate and manifest. Because, of course, we're not separate parts and thoughts and emotions and histories and all the things that we can list and talk about and write about and go to therapy about. We're just one, right? We're just one whole something. And maybe it's too small to say one whole person. Somebody told me in the Genjo Koan class you were looking today at Dogen's wonderful teaching that to study the way is to study the self. And then he turns it on his head right away. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self, he says, that's really good. You know? He's got this big long thing about how good it is, you know. Good beyond good, you know. I actually think if we were going to really understand that teaching, we probably need to insert another step just for our own cultural condition. Maybe we should say, to study the ways to study the self, then insert, to study the self is to love the self. And then we better go ahead and forget the self, you know, we won't get too precious about all this. But we probably need a little love in there. So how do we lovingly hold this jar, you know, and let the mud settle? I mean, one thing we know for sure, if we keep shaking the darn jar, it's not going to happen, right? You know, there's no question about that. That's pretty straightforward. So we're always running around shaking the jar, you know, getting agitated, getting busy, you know, getting upset about things, avoiding things, procrastinating, all kinds of stuff, right? Lots of jar shaking. And maybe sometimes it's absolutely the thing to do to shake the jar because there's some work that needs to be done, and so jars have got to shake here. Things need to change. But probably if we're always shaking the jar, there's never any clarity. So where this metaphor falls apart a little bit is an actual jar of muddy water. You could just sit it on the shelf and forget about it and go watch TV. A little bit later, be like, oh, cool, good. Enlightenment, right on. So it seems like this particular kind of jar, our heart-mind jar, we actually can't just set it down. We have to hold it, you know. Maybe we can't set it down because it's, in fact, us, you know. We have to hold it. And it seems like we also really helps it if we're paying attention to its presence, you know. Whether that means we're staring at it or just kind of got awareness of it out of the corner of our eye, it's hard to say, different ways of practicing. But we need to hold the jar and be aware of the jar. And so when we're sitting Zazen, the great thing, just to start with, is for those minutes, for those 60 minutes on a Wednesday night, we finally stopped shaking the dang jar, you know. At least shaking it a little less, you know. Holding it a little more still, letting it be a little more still. Or maybe just letting our hands relax so that we don't clench the jar so tightly. So I was preparing for this talk, and I knew I had a little shelf with books on Zazen, and I ran into a little book that somebody gave me or something. I don't know how I got it, but it's a little book published by the Soto Zen Church, you know, Soto Shu, but it's part of their English language outreach efforts. A little book called Soto Zen, An Introduction to Zazen. So I thought it'd be nice to see what our Japanese HQ has to say about Zazen. And some of the stuff that you get from Japan, just, I don't know, the translation and stuff is a little wonky, actually. Like, barely worth reading, actually. But this is a nice book. This was really very carefully done. I spent, you know, then a few hours checking it out, which was wonderful. And one of the central authors of it, who put it together, was is Shohaku Okamura Roshi, whom we know and appreciate. I've met Shohaku-san a couple times, and back to Andrea Thatch, one of the teachers Andrea studies with, also author of the wonderful book Living by Vow, about the sort of particulars of Zen practice, so a good way to sort of study the other pieces of our evening, you know, the little chants and bows and stuff. And also a wonderful book in Kenjo Koan, which Chris has been reading from. So Shohaku-san just keeps showing up. So let me just read you two pages from his opening essay, and then there's lots of other interesting stuff in this book. Shohaku says that Dogen actually quotes this one koan, this one Zen story, in three or four of his writings about Zazen, so it must be important. So let's study that, he says. Here's the story. As Yaku-san was sitting, a monk asked, "What is thinking in the steady, immobile sitting? What is thinking?" The master replied, "Thinking of not thinking." The monk asked, How is thinking of not thinking? The master said, "Beyond thinking." Did you catch all that? The master, the monk asked, "What is thinking in Zazen?" Master said, "Thinking of not thinking." That's what it is. Monk said, "How is that? You know, what is that?" And the master said, "Beyond thinking." You know, the cool thing here is that Shohaku knows this story in the original, and he puts in little parentheses the different Japanese words that are being used. So, what is thinking? The word is shi-ryo. So thinking is shi-ryo. Not thinking is fu-shi-ryo. So thinking of not thinking is shi-ryo, fu-shi-ryo. And then the last part, the conclusion, where it's translated here, beyond thinking, is he-shi-ryo. So shi-ryo, fu-shi-ryo, and he-shi-ryo. So I hope this won't be too not basic for us, but I'll read it. I'll read what Shohaku says. Here are thinking, shirio, not thinking, fu shirio, and beyond thinking, he shirio. When we discuss the mind in Zazen, shikantaza, another term for just sitting, we need to understand these three words. Thinking is the function of mind. Thinking, or shirio, is not limited to just intellectual rational thought. Excuse me. This shirio includes feelings, emotions, and more. It actually maps to formations. In Fukan Zazengi, Dogen Zenshi said, "Put aside the operation of your intellect, volition, and consciousness." Original words Dogen Zenshi used are shin, yi, and shiki. In early Buddhism, these three words are used alternately as names for the discriminating mind. Shin, or citta, refers to the eighth consciousness, alaya. Yi, or manas, refers to the seventh consciousness, mana. And shiki refers to the first six layers of consciousness that we think of as the ordinary mind. So now we're referring to the Yogacara theory of the mind, where there are six ordinary consciousnesses, what we see and hear and feel, and the thoughts that we cognize. And then there's some other quality of mind that somehow is accessing a bigger space. And what it's accessing is what comes out of this sort of deep underground well of reality called alaya. So thinking's a big process, includes this whole process, whole thing. So it's not just our thoughts. Anyway. He goes on. In Zazen, we put aside the operation of these layers of the mind. Even though we put them aside, the mind still functions by itself in each moment, or even when we're sleeping. Excuse me. The stream of consciousness is like a waterfall. It constantly flows, but has no permanent nature or self. As we sit in Zazen posture, our stomach is digesting food, the food we have eaten, our heart is beating, our blood still circulates, our body functions of its own accord, and our brain is producing thoughts. Even in Zazen, thoughts arise naturally. When we sit facing the wall, there's nothing in front of us as an object. There's only the wall. We have no object in our mind because we don't visualize anything. We don't concentrate on a mantra. We don't pay any special attention to anything. We just sit. Still, many different kinds of thoughts come and go naturally. And it's very clear that thoughts, emotions, and daydreams are illusions, like bubbles rising in water. We just let go of them. No clinging to them, chasing after them, or pushing them away. We really do nothing but sit. This is what Dogen Zenji says when he means think of not thinking. We cannot say there is no thinking. We cannot say that we are thinking. It's interesting, huh? We cannot say there is no thinking, but we also cannot say that we are thinking. Thinking of not thinking is the precise expression of reality, is the precise expression of the reality of mind in Zazen. It's like a car engine idling. The transmission is in neutral, and even though the engine is moving, the car does not move. Even though thoughts are coming and going, we take no action based on these thoughts. Thoughts are simply idling away, so therefore we don't create karma. This is what Dogen Zenji meant in Zwick Monkey when he said, Zazen is the true form of ourself and non-doing or not action. So we're just trying to put the thing in neutral. You know? And sometimes people hear about meditation, they think that it's going to make their mind blank or something like that, right? And it doesn't take long, you know, to see how that is. But what's changing here is a very big change, right? Out of gear, you know? So we don't run around shaking the jar anymore. And the rest of the book, he goes on for a little while longer about that, but not too much longer. But the bulk of the book, actually, is little pictures. I'll bring this out to the lobby. Little pictures and diagrams showing angles and the way the body is held and the way that you bow, and there's nice little color pictures. So, you know, the Japanese really want to help us get the forms right, you know, so we could study this and maybe we improve a little bit some of the basics. But we are actually sitting. So this is, sitting has a big meaning, but let's not forget the basics. We're sitting in this body, and the body is constructed in a particular way that we want to learn to cooperate with. So maybe I'll just say a little bit here before we run out of time. I've been doing a kind of renewed study of the structure of the pelvis. And actually, an aspiration arose in me. It'd be cool to get like a full life-size model of just the pelvis. And we can bring it in here and put it on Zafu's and see how it works. Because that's the base of everything we're doing, you know? And so, you know, the pelvis has this big bone on the sides here. You know, the big kind of, I forget what they're called right now. Iliac? No. Ischial. Thank you. Yeah, we got a doctor here.
I can bring you a life-size pelvis.
Oh, fantastic! Right, all right.
You want it, I'll bring it up.
All right, next week. And then coming off the bottom of this are these big kind of strong loops, you know. So loops are kind of strong, have some structural integrity. We have multiple doctors in here, geez. It's overwhelming. Now I'm feeling self-conscious. And they're kind of C-shaped and kind of a flattened C on the bottom. So these, and they're right down here, are the bones that we actually want to sit on. And they're called ischial tuberosities.
This is the ilium.
I was thinking ischial tuberosities are connected to the big, yeah, so the ischial tuberosities, which are the sit bones, connected to the ilium. Ha. These are like structurally really strong. And if we can place ourselves with, you know, the edge of the cushion or the edge of the chair right in the middle of these, we have this strong, strong foundation. It requires the pelvis to be tilted forward just a little bit, but that's for the good, because that supports the spine being in the natural S curve that it would like to be in. Not if we sit back on our tail, the collapsed C, right? C for collapsed, and then our chest is collapsed, and the airways are smushed. You know, I think about it with this posture, and people hang out in this posture all the time, right? It's amazing we can even breathe, you know? It's like a wonder of the body that it puts up with this shit, you know? It's like, okay, I guess I'll keep breathing, but I'm really looking forward to when you sit better, you know? So when we first sit down, let's really pay attention to that and really tune in to where on the seat bones are we seated, and we want to be right about the middle. So there's subtle little gradations. It could be a little further forward, a little further back. So just rocking that pelvis and finding where is a good place to put these 100 and whatever pounds of stuff, you know, that we're going to park here for 30 minutes without moving it, you know. And then the structure from there, of course, is largely hangs on the spine. So then to gently give the spine a little bit of fluidity, rocking left and right. And Dogen did this, right? He writes about this, rocking forward and back. And then kind of finding out through gravity where balance is. And then here's what I also like to do. I recommend this a lot. When you first sit down, take a pretty strong inhalation and imagine your spine lengthening all the way up into the back of the neck. So the back of the head rises a little bit. Inhaling, getting taller, and then exhaling, letting go. Letting the shoulders release, letting the face soften, letting the chest and belly be soft. So do that a couple of times at the beginning. Finding balance, finding the foundation. And then we have our special hand posture, so finding what that feels like and how the hands and the arms can cooperate with this or CFI it, you know? And then, this is an important step. Forget about it. Relax, you know? Of course, relax is a relative term. There may be some pain, maybe some discomfort. What I learned when I dislocated my shoulder, I'm counting on the physicians to correct me about this stuff if I get it wrong, is through sort of, you know, years and decades of bad posture, ligaments lengthen and atrophy, right? So it's not just a matter of like, oh, right, I learned the proper posture, I'm just going to like, done, fixed. No, we're really conditioned by our history in the situation with our muscular system and our skeletal system and all of it. But as best we can we create a balanced, upright, regal posture that is supportive of letting that jar be still without our needing to kind of cling onto it. That when the spine, when the body's really balanced in the skeletal system, from the foundation to the top of the head, and we're balanced through, and we're balanced on it through gravity, cooperating with gravity, we can relax, you know? We can let go. We can breathe and let the mud settle a little bit. So I guess that's Zazen talk part one, just because we gotta stop. I wanna talk about breathing and lots of other stuff. There's a lot you can say about something as simple as doing nothing. So thanks very much for listening. And I look forward to the next edition. I really enjoyed last week that we actually managed to all participate, which is on me to create space for, so I'll keep working on that. And because we all know a lot about this stuff, it's a collective intelligence at work.